You're listening to a podcast series from Vietcetera Production. Vietnam is forecasted to be one of the fastest growing economies in Southeast Asia and the world. To understand the dynamics behind Vietnam's miracle growth, Vietcetera meets with business leaders every week to discuss the country's future growth prospects. We also learn about how they build and manage teams and why they think innovation will be key to Vietnam's role in the world order. What's up, guys? It's your host, Hao, here. In today's episode of Vietnam Innovators, we are joined by Alex Crane, the managing director of Cushman & Wakefield. Cushman & Wakefield is one of the world's largest real estate consultancies and a leader in the commercial real estate industry. From plug-and-play warehouses and factories in Bac Ninh to land parts in Quang Ninh, their portfolio is comprehensive. Alex has been working in real estate since 2003, first with Savills in Vietnam, then in various roles with Cushman & Wakefield. Throughout this time, Alex has worked across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry, including sale and acquisition of investment and development opportunities. We ask Alex where Vietnam's CRE is heading and what forces are at play in commercial property's lifecycle and how China's diminishing role as the world's production hub is benefiting Vietnam. But before we begin, we'd also like to extend a big thanks to our sponsor, Office House. Office House is a modernist marvel opening within Silicon City and hopes to revolutionize the way the city works. Inspired by a Bauhaus design, Office House has residential zones, the country's largest Aeon Mall, and Than Son Nhat International Airport, all within easy reach. Formed for function and built to be affordable, it offers the LEED certified human scale alternative outside of the downtown core. What's up, guys? It's your host, Hao, here of the Vietnam Innovators series. We're nearing our 30th episode of this series that we started just a few months ago. So big thanks to all of the readers, listeners, and watchers on whatever platform you're listening this on. Big thanks to you guys. Also a big thanks to our sponsor today, Office House. It's a new office development based in Celadon City. We're going to hear more about that today as well from our guest, Alex Crane. So without further ado, let's intro our guest here today. He's made lots of his time available for us this afternoon. So again, thanks for his busy schedule, making time for us. Alex Crane is the managing director of Cushman & Wakefield. It's a management company, real estate management company based in New York City. They've had an office here in Vietnam for some time. Let's hear it from Alex about what they're up to and more about the real estate kind of landscape in Vietnam. Alex, welcome to the show and thanks so much for coming.
Thanks for welcoming me. You know, I'm a fan of the show, so it's great to be here and great to spend time with you. We've known each other a while now, so it's nice to, you know, sort of share some of these conversations that we've had over the last few years. Going back, my time in Vietnam is approaching 10 years. Cushman & Wakefield's time in Vietnam, around 12, 13 years. Mm-hmm. As you said, founded in New York over 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. Parts of the business for M&A stretch back about 160 years, I think. In Europe, it's quite a long legacy. I'm at the very end of the legacy, I guess the newest part of the legacy here in Vietnam. As you mentioned, the real estate market is pretty dynamic right now. We're in a dynamic economy in Vietnam, and obviously real estate needs to move along with that. Very many different types of interests of people. Real estate touches everybody in some way, whether it's just somewhere to live, playing with investment, or looking at places to work, shop, play, and more importantly here, make. So that, you know, that's one of the great stories here, I think, for Vietnam right now. So across many, many segments, things are changing and changing quite fast. So it's great to be here and be experiencing and driving a lot of that change.
Definitely. I think Vietnam is at this inflection point. So you know, lots of people are looking in and there's not so many experts or people kind of projecting out. So it's great to have experts like you guys here to share more about the real estate scene. So, you know, let's jump straight into it. We've got a number of questions for you today, not just from our team, but also from the readership. And we have quite a few questions that we'll drop as well. Actually, right before the show, we kind of put a teaser out there. We're welcoming Alex Crane. He's the MD of this real estate development management company. And lots of people were asking questions. So we'll share some of those with you today. But before we do that, we're going to start off with some of the talking points we put up today. And the first is really understanding the rise of some of the kind of, you know, new developments happening in Saigon. So recently, for instance, a portion of Saigon was kind of put off into a new district called Tu Duc. We want to better understand what's happened as a result of that. So our question for you today is relevant to kind of your expertise.
Let's talk about the rise of this Tuduk city and specifically the office market. Right now, the city's commercial activity is really centered in these other areas like Binyung, Dongnai, where a lot of the manufacturing is. What will happen after the merger of Tuduk City with Districts 2 and 9? What do you expect to happen from a real estate perspective?
Yeah, I think it, there's legislative changes and authority changes there that actually I think will put the government focus obviously onto the district. So of course, there's going to be targets in terms of attraction of investment and watching the growth of GDP within this specific city, within a city, calling it. So there's going to be this kind of interesting race between Ho Chi Minh City and Tuduk City now, which is going to be quite interesting to watch. So the focus on just in terms of what's going to happen, what's going to be drawn into Tuduk City versus Ho Chi Minh. Obviously, we've got a long history. You know, Tuduk City used to be separate Ho Chi Minh, it was blended, now it's taken out again. We've seen tons of investment. And if you watch, you know, key infrastructure investment, it's largely been heading east and it's largely been heading into this new Tuduk City. So following the highways, the metro line, the new airport, port development, which as you said, has sort of grown that Binyung and Dongnai area, which is so important to us as the engine room really for the south of Vietnam as a manufacturing hub. But it hasn't really had this kind of office section. It hasn't had a CBD, hasn't sort of had this office market really develop. So there's pockets of offices within Tuduk, usually District 2 and a little bit in District 9, but District 2 so far has been the most prominent. And of course, 2TM is now falling into Tuduk as part of District 2. So that's where the CBD is likely to land, which is kind of interesting because you'll have this sort of, in physics, it's like a, they call it a dual star or something, you know, where you have this sort of shared center of gravity. These two CBDs are right next to each other. So it's going to be quite interesting to see how that plays. And then the wider east sort of corridors going out and how that sits into the various markets and benchmarks that you might undertake if you're looking at Ho Chi Minh versus Tuduk. So as it stands, Tuduk City office space makes up like 2% of total inventory if you combine the two cities, essentially, yeah. Right? So it's a very small proportion. Naturally, as buildings are built, they're new and hopefully higher quality. So rents, if you look just at the pure numbers in Tuduk, have actually increased faster than Ho Chi Minh. But that's because the buildings are new, right? So we're going to see this continue. And particularly, we've not seen much development in that critical area of Tuduk, of 2TM, my apologies. So where that CBD is going to likely form, we think. So you've got the infrastructure, you've got the access to Ho Chi Minh City, you've got the access to the ports, access to universities and graduates, access to the manufacturing zones, a high-tech park. So that, I reckon, is going to become quite a pivotal point for what happens with the future of the office market in Tuduk City. Mm-hmm. We haven't yet got a grade A building in Tuduk City, technically, so that's all in Ho Chi Minh. When that happens, you'll see this rent spike because jumping quality, something new's happening. So don't get fooled when you see these Tuduk rents go up because it's just driven by new supply, higher quality. That'll probably happen for 3 to 5 years as these things develop. It'll plateau off, and we expect probably land somewhere about 70 to 75% of rents in Ho Chi Minh for the equivalent. Mm. So then you start looking at the equivalent. So 2TM is going to be equivalent to downtown Saigon.
Right, right.
And then you've probably got looking further extended to Tuduk. Maybe you start making comparisons to Saigon South, sort of Phu My Hung, to the north, to areas around Saledon City, those sort of parts that might become these sort of decentralized parts of the market, which is going to be a big driver in future because CBDs now, post-pandemic, are kind of a different animal than they were prior. Decentralization, looking at areas of more space, closer to staff, is now a different consideration for occupiers and developers. So how that dynamic plays out, it's going to be really fascinating to watch. And you've got this, as I said, this kind of tug of war happening with rents and demand. But a good comparison, we don't actually have to look so far. We just look to the north. You got kind of Hanoi has this developing three CBD market for best part of 10 years already. So you've had, you know, Hoàng Kiem versus Midtown versus the West and how they've interacted with each other. We're going to start having to see how that plays out with the Tuduk versus Saigon, but how they sort of find that natural level amongst themselves.
I was about to say, it's like when you look on someone's business card, if they're from Ho Chi Minh City or Tuduk, what does it say about that company or that people? I mean, I would be curious to see a shift if certain types of companies will move to Tuduk. Will the true financial center, like will the banks and insurance companies move there? Will maybe the startups or the technology companies move out there. So all of that's at play. And I think in terms of seeing what anchor tenants will move out to Duduk and first, I think that's going to be quite a shift to see in the years to come. So
I'd share that, particularly, you know, is the things we mentioned with regard to access to high-tech parks, access to manufacturing,
access
to graduates. If you look at the number of universities in Tudor area, it's vast. So, you know, you've got to start looking at maybe technology sectors, R&D centers, younger-based industries, maybe media advertising might start to look a little bit further east. Of course, always, and has been a trend going east, is manufacturing important, logistics, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what gets drawn out.
Right.
I don't think it'll be the banks. I think they'll stay.
We'll see. Yeah, they'll stay in District 1. Well, aside from commercial buildings, you know, you cover industrial, you cover kind of logistics parks as well. That's another world in itself. And it's transformed over 2020 as kind of companies have shifted production out of China and other parts of the world into Vietnam. What do you think are impacting those industries, like, or moving that production? Which industries are really doing it? And what kind of facilities can these new guys move into Vietnam expect to find?
Yeah, so it's a very short question for such an expansive potential answer. So you might have to cut
me. We only can keep it up to 5 minutes.
Okay, so, you might have to cut me off, which my staff are very used to. They're very strict on my time. But, you know, long story of manufacturing shift to Vietnam, nothing new, been happening 20 years, trade wars, pandemic, accelerated a lot of stuff happening now. So probably the most recent sort of influx of large investment has largely obviously been from China, but largely centered around electronics industry. Obviously, another interesting thing that's happened last year is you've had initial impact of pandemic was things like garments, furniture, which is a huge manufacturing business in Vietnam, almost came to a standstill. So what did those guys do? Well, they started making PPE, right? So you've seen this kind of really weird shift of what's happened in the last 12 months versus the last 24. And so on. So the dynamics there are so fast moving and faster than ever before, which ties us kind of into that logistics play, which as an industry used to be a sort of, it wasn't really a core investment. You know, logistics parks weren't really that attractive to investors. No one really thought about where they were. As consumers, we never really gave it a second thought. Throughout pandemic, of course, we're all focused on it. We've just been talking about the Suez Canal for the last week. It's at the front of everybody's mind. So logistics is something that's accelerated faster coming through the pandemic, obviously with the need for work from home and everything else around that and challenges around that. Vietnam's been very good at attracting and making it easier for logistics firms to be here to supplement that manufacturing base, which is, you know, led by the export markets primarily. It's still very expensive logistics here, but it's quite competitive. If you're looking again at salaries plus land cost, logistics cost, freight cost, then actually it's still a very attractive play, and it will be for years to go. If these guys are looking here, historically, if you're a very high tech manufacturer, say an Intel, we've been talking about Tudor, right? It's Intel, high tech park. You buy land, you build bespoke facilities,
entirely new,
built to spec by very high standards with these very high needs from those companies. That will always continue, so they'll buy and they'll build their own. What's happened more recently, though, is, and I'd say over the last 3 to 4 years, we've seen this real push of just, and this is foreign developers, but also local developers need a lot of credit in terms of the speed of the sophistication of the market in delivering assets that these companies want. So capabilities around construction, built to suit requirements or certain standards, with these buildings, we're seeing a lot of LEED construction, the environmentally accredited construction in manufacturing and logistics now, which is great to see. These are all things that, you know, foreign companies want. And if it's available here, they'll come and rent as opposed to that very high capex need of buy land, build your own facility. So the sophistication of local markets is something that's really driving that as well. And that, I think, is one of the biggest changes in the last 3 or 4 years, is just having that outlet of good quality space at reasonable price available here if you wanted to just come in quickly. Mm-hmm. That now is much easier than it was even, you know, 3 years ago, as I said. So that's been real dynamic change and a real positive shift in the market.
And we see certain industries shifting out, like a lot of those have gone out of business because of the pandemic and have been replaced by supposedly high-tech producers looking for land and facilities to redo. Is that right?
I think the basic furniture, the basic garment factory, there's still, there will be demand for it. I mean, if you look at the change in the export garments recently post, as the pandemic's turning around, the news isn't that bad. I mean, yes, it was very, very difficult. As I said, a lot of them converted to PPE, so they actually probably did better in the last 12 months.
Right. Know?
So, so no, it's not, I don't think it's a case of displacement, and I don't think that's the right approach either. So I think to embrace that higher tech, better quality manufacturer, cleaner industry, it's new parks, it's better infrastructure, it's better management, it's better asset quality that's going to attract these companies in. So I think they can sit side by side. I don't think it's displacement, but for sure, you know, not to say that certain industries have had it hard over the last 12 months, but I think these guys will come back. You know, if there are facilities available that these guys have vacated, we're finding it pretty easy to sell those on or lease out somebody else. So the demand still is there.
Let's go a little bit back to what you were saying earlier about high-tech solutions. You know, when they're, these developers are fitting out new buildings, whatever, for whatever purpose, they're really investing into high-tech solutions, maybe you know, solar energy, maybe contactless or whatever. Maybe you can spotlight an example of a project that encapsulates that perfect kind of transition, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, and again, another one of these things that I think that the demand for and trends for are speeding up post-pandemic with, you know, what's at the front of everyone's mind. So, you know, the one that comes to mind is a great, actually great client, great project, and something that, you know, was evolving during the pandemic was this project Office House in Seladon City, north of, just on the edge of the north of Ho Chi Minh City. You know, going into pandemic, then through, and now coming out and sort of looking at bringing this project to market, developers very quickly were there to react and say, you know, what is the impact of this pandemic that's kicking off? We didn't know everything about it at the time, but very quickly, you know, talking about solutions of, you know, contactless. So that has actually been implemented at this building. They've extended that into, again, an environmental consideration. They're going for a LEED Silver accreditation on the building. And just looking at the quality of the mechanical and electrical facilities in the building. So, you know, this mindset change happened very quickly, but I think coming out of this, we're going to see this acceleration of very good high-tech, forward-thinking buildings that are actually creating healthier environments for occupiers. Now, that building is specifically, they were smart because they've designed it with this ginormous floor plate. It's like 2,500 square meters.
And that's very rare to find in place at Coachman.
It is. And it's like 100 meters long. So one day I'll race you down it and we can see, you know. But, you know, that's specifically designed for sort of, given that location, the, you know, back office type, the IT type, media type occupiers that like that expanse of one floor, but equally very forward thinking in terms of the needs of their employees. So having that sort of contactless into building right up to sat at the desk is something that hasn't been done here, I think, before, certainly an office building. And it's just an example of these sort of small changes you can make to design or during design, which is quite impressive, to actually make these a more welcoming and healthy place for workers to be. So I think the contactless thing is a great thing that we can figure out. What we haven't figured out is how to do the welcome light. Do we still do contactless kind of? Do we just wink? I don't know. But, you know, there's nice little details coming through in projects like that. Office House is a really good example. I think of a first react, quick to react, and then, you know, first to deliver something new to market, which I think, you know, is going to be very well received.
Excellent. Well, on that topic, you know, we put out some teasers before we invite you to the studio. And we got quite a number of responses on LinkedIn and whatever channels else we put out there. So we have some reader questions, and they've actually called in to record them. So we're going to play a few for you. Right. We only have two. We got like, I think, 30 or 40, but we only have two to share with you today, Alex. So we're going to play the first one.
Thank you. Hi. There's talk of a new high-tech park in District 9 and a growing interest among international tech firms. But overseas investment in Vietnamese high-tech parks remains lacklustre. What solutions are needed to create an upward trend? All
right. Yeah, so a lot of demand, obviously, for people to come in, but maybe the investment in those parks seems a bit slow still, maybe? Maybe you can answer that question.
Yeah, so I think, I don't know, I think high-tech has always been a very ambitious achievement for Vietnam. And I think we've had, you know, some really wonderful success stories already. We mentioned Intel, and I think, you know, one of the first certainly maybe the largest to date in terms of that high-tech investment from a foreign company. Within parks like that, of course, there are tax incentives available. you know, the corporate income tax breaks, lower tariffs for a longer period. There's certain tax relief on product, materials. You can get tax relief on certain training and education if you're an incubator type business. But I think probably the biggest challenge, I think, again, is an issue I've experienced firsthand with an R&D firm looking at Vietnam, who were looking to invest an awful amount of money here, but they were, this is, you know, higher end R&D, they were purely worried about the number of grads that were coming through that they could actually employ. And I think that's one of the key things. Now, that was a while ago, and I think that's a short-term kind of view. They needed these grads in 3 years. They're probably already here now. You know, we've probably got through that just in terms of, the output that Vietnam is producing of high quality talent, but it wasn't there then. And I think those perceptions maybe need to change. I think also, if you look at the continuity of supply chain, maybe has also been a bit of a difficult factor for Vietnam. If you are investing so much in something so high tech, you need maybe more assurances. The supply
line of talent.
I'm talking about physical supply chain, can you get these high tech products in, out, parts? Labor, of course, is one, depending if it's manufacturing. But R&D, I was talking about before, was more grad-related. It was IT. But they would sit, nicely in one of those high-tech parks. So there's a confluence of things going on. I think a lot of that has changed and for the better in the last few years in Vietnam. And actually, the early indicators, I think, if you look at how the Koreans have started to invest more of the high-tech, you've seen Foxconn and Apple's downstream sort of guys investing more and more here. Recently, Panasonic came in from Thailand. So I think it is starting to happen, but that pure high tech has always been, a very, very ambitious target to get to, and I'm sure it will, but I think just the speed of that is probably maybe needs a little bit more tax relief, or maybe these firms need just more assurances on those supply chains or the labor or high-end R&D if that's what they do. I wouldn't say so much it's an issue with the real estate or the parks themselves. It's more what may or may need to go into those parks that might give them the challenges. As I said before, logistics costs in Vietnam are still quite high. So, maybe we're still not quite as competitive as, say, Malaysia or Philippines or Indonesia. So I think there's some considerations that it's not just the Vietnam issue. We have to compete on a regional level, but more so these days on a global level.
Excellent. Next question for you, Alex, is more about you walk around Ho Chi Minh City and any city in Vietnam, really, and you see a lot of storefronts kind of closed and no one really renting those. So of course, that's on a retail basis. And you would imagine maybe on the commercial side, you're seeing something similar because maybe not as many companies are making that move now, or companies are hesitant to move. If anything, they're downgrading, at least in terms of cost. What does that bode for the tenant market? What have you seen in terms of, we're 1 year into this COVID kind of situation. Maybe you can paint that picture, and does it bode better for the buildings coming up online now or the ones that already exist?
It's never been my strongest suit, actually, but it's one I kind of enjoy. And I guess on the purest level of, we like to go to shops and buy things and hang out in nice places like beautiful cafes in Winter Mekhi. I think there's a lot happening here, but as with COVID, we've seen an acceleration of something. In most cases, it's been positive. In retail's case, it was an acceleration of a trend. I think it was happening anyway. Department stores were dying. Everything, we are looking to shop online. So, these issues have been apparent for a while. This was probably the death knell for some of those that were happening. We look around our city, we look around Nguyen Hue, we look around Dong Khoi, these beautiful streets, these romantic streets, and there's nothing there, and it's really, really sad. But something has to break, something has to change. Taking away from those, so those are probably your core downtown, very reliant on tourists, we get that. I would suggest that it would be nice to have something there. A good friend of mine has recently put something out suggesting that, many of these arcades are sort of given to younger students, with certain incentives or some breaks on cost there. And I think that's a great way just to kickstart something while There's no tourists here, or why a lot of these shops are closed down. So I think some proactive measures could be used to improve that street scene. And I think once, you know, that builds environment, that builds trade for everybody else, that could just be a nice little inflection point. That's not a real estate guy. Maybe that's just a romantic guy walking down Don Quixote that wants to see something. What's happening with rents is actually on Don Quixote for those sort of places, these shops are still empty. I don't think the rents are coming down. I don't think it's affordable anymore. What's happening in the shopping centers, which is a different story, is that, yeah, rents have been impacted. These landlords have had to make concessions while these stores have been on lockdown or trade's been a little slower to pick up. But, you know, these are challenges they were aware of with the growth of e-commerce. So how this is going to change is all of retail has to be really reassessed, I think. And I think we've seen some great examples leading this change. One is actually Aeon Mall, which was also in Selden City. You know, they came in years ago with huge investment, this massive shopping center, in a, at that time, quite an unknown location. And it was the best shopping center in Vietnam, purely because they got the tenant mixing right. They got the F&B mix right. The sort of products you could buy there were affordable. It was a great place to go and hang out with your family. And that really worked. So they were just kind of, okay, we're not just the shopping center.
It's creating a new product, creating a new audience.
You're moving into that lifestyle kind of more situation. So that has life, I think. This will have to go further. And I think the way retail is used in either of those shopping centers is changing. You look across the world. You know, it is becoming more lifestyle, entertainment. Certain events are taking place in these shopping centers. And that has to be the future. Ultimately, the old-fashioned retailers might change. Conversely, you might say, well, some of the online guys might come back into bricks and mortar like Amazon are doing. So, you know, some interesting things could change. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see a Tiki Mall in Vietnam. That would be a wonderful thing. But maybe, way down the line, we might see these guys re-enter. Mm. The other parts, I think, looking at actually what's happened in Vietnam is neighborhood retail is actually proving to be quite robust. We're still seeing so many sort of convenience stores opening up everywhere, restaurants opening up in new locations, that neighborhood retail seems to have come more alive again. I don't know if it's just proximity to where people live or, you know, reluctance to go into that. I don't know what that is, but, you know, it seems like a pretty healthy environment at neighborhood level. Then you have these weird kind of, you know, podium retail, which are usually at the bottom of a apartment block, and, you know, they're built because that's what is required by government to build. Developers don't want to do it. They're kind of not really sure how to mix that properly. Those things need fixing. I think there's some really interesting space to play with as the sort of rent values are coming down, cap values are coming down. It actually enables you more space to go and play and have new ideas. And what do we do with these things to actually make them, you know, more viable, make better neighborhood mix, make a better retail experience, make a lifestyle experience, leisure experience, golf experience is a new one, these kind of e-golf things, you know. So new things are coming in that I think might actually support a lot of this. But the fundamentals of retail in Vietnam, growing demographics, young population, these are all favorable. So, you know, places like Don Quixote won't go away, but there has to be a correction in some of the rents there. I think we did a study, maybe it was 5-6 years back, Cushman APAC, and I think Don Quixote came out as one of the top five most expensive retail streets in Asia, which is kind of bonkers, right?
So it's like Japan, Korea, China, and that mix as well.
Yeah, so, you know, that doesn't really sit right to me. So I think some correction is going to be needed. But I'm surprised we haven't seen more sort of short-term lettings in those sort of stores just to get, whether it's revenue or just get a few businesses going, I'm not sure. But certainly there's been some pain points in the larger, sort of more corporate level retail that I think those guys are getting ahead of it. But yeah, there's got to be some reuse, adaptive reuse, repositioning of a lot of retail going forward. So again, pandemic might just, well, it's painful right now and it accelerated the challenges for a lot of these guys. It might, you know, spring out some new ideas.
Well, aside from retail, let's talk about commercial. Let's talk about the concerns that landlords and occupiers might have in that segment. What are you hearing about chatter these days in regards to that segment?
For commercial space, I think, again, the quality of construction and design, quality of management. And I think people are starting to look at longevity with buildings. You know, preventative maintenance is not something that's often mentioned in Vietnam, looking after stuff before it goes wrong. Usually it kind of goes wrong
when
someone kind of tries to fix that. You know, so these are some pretty basic stuff. But I think this is a level of sophistication that's growing very fast as the market's maturing, as it's becoming more competitive landlords developers have to do that. But equally, that's sort of a trend driven by occupiers. So often these trends are coming in from overseas multinationals, right? So, you know, the ideas are born in Europe, US, wherever, and then they'll be implemented by, you know, the big multinationals that are present here. So they'll drive a lot of that change. So whether it's a requirement for, you know, a well standard on a building or a LEED standard on a building to just push the quality of that construction, the maintenance, the management, looking at things like solar, being a little bit more conservative with power use. How do we fix aircon? Aircon's the biggest challenge the globe has right now in terms of real estate and the impact. How do we fix that? I think these are questions that will start coming through. That's on the minds of the big companies, certainly on the minds of the developers, because we can reduce energy costs. We're all making, we're not spending as much money. You know, it's a much more efficient environment for everybody. So I think that's probably the biggest thing that's driving, will drive change going forward. A lot of that is driven, of course, by people. So like we mentioned, office house. I mean, you know, if you're creating a better work environment for your team, you're attracting better talent, you're retaining better talent, your output is much better. So I think those are the pure fundamentals of what those guys are looking at right now.
Well, talking about change, Alex, you've been in Vietnam for a number of years, so has Cushman. And one of the last listener questions that has called in kind of strikes upon that tone of looking back and looking forward about what those changes have been. Zoe, maybe you can play the last message for Alex here.
Hello, you've been active in Vietnam's real estate market for quite some time now. What was the most striking development in the past 5 years, and what trends unique to Vietnam are you seeing emerge?
So aside from Dong Khoi being one of the most expensive streets in all of Asia, maybe you can share more about those changes.
The biggest changes, apart from the amount of white hair I have.
Me too.
Congratulations. Okay, yeah. I think various things. Firstly, as you know, impacting, as we've just been talking about retail, how e-commerce has really come from nothing in my time here. Looking at the growth, not in terms of the commercial space, but how that's impacted retail, but how that's driven the other markets, most important to us, the industrial and logistics piece. That's a global phenomenon. I don't think that's a Vietnam thing. I think Vietnam actually might overtake some countries in terms of the adoption of e-commerce very, very soon. So maybe more specifically, I think you could probably look to infrastructure development. I've been pretty surprised. I mean, we all understand there are projects that have challenges, but I think ultimately, if you look across the entire country, the infrastructure development here has been phenomenal. And I think the Vietnamese government investment into infrastructure as a proportion of GDP is higher than any other country in Asia. I think that's a great driver. That drives, you know, the logistics markets. It drives residential markets. It drives new CBDs, new urban areas, which I think we have to have. Residential being the last. I think the most surprising thing I regret most about not buying something here 10 years back is just the growth of some of the capital values around, particularly high-end apartments specifically, which I think, you know, in Ho Chi Minh, maybe the last 5 years is up something like 80%.
Do you think that'll continue? That's a side question.
Not
the time to answer that.
No, this is a question, you know, it comes up at every dinner party.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
So yeah, look, I think there are some fundamentals at play that are very unique to Vietnam. We're not in a highly leveraged market. There's cash buyers, there are payment plans, but again, demographics, urbanization rate is very, very high. That young population creating households, new marriages and things like that. A smarter man than me pointed out.
I think Alex is trying to say, let's buy. Let's keep buying.
Look, I'm not under pressure to say that. I mean, I'm not a resi agent or consultant, but I think be careful with it. You know, to speak to that, I think you have to look at, yes, capital values have increased. There's some challenges now around what is affordable in the market, right? But equally, if you watch the rent market is not increasing at the same rate. So, you know, there are some fundamentals that people need to be aware of, but of course there are opportunities here. And I think that's driven by the growth of wealth, the growth of demographics here.
Excellent. Well, Alex, thank you for sharing your insights with our listeners today. I'm sure they're very eager to learn more about real estate more than ever, given these rising values and all these changes that are happening. To our listeners, thank you again for tuning in to another episode of Vietnam Innovators. Again, our host, me, and our guest today, Alex Crane, Managing Director of Cushman & Wakefield. If you have questions about the real estate industry, dropping them in the comments. I'm sure Alex will get to them next time. Thank you again, Alex, for coming to the studio this afternoon.
Thank you very much. It's been great.
Vietcetera's Vietnam Innovator Series is only one of many podcasts hosted by the team. We also have Have a Sip, hosted by our VP of Content, Thuy Minh, as well as the Vietnamese edition of Vietnam Innovators, hosted by Vietcetera's Chief Operating Officer, Ruby Nguyen. Look out for more podcast production soon from the Vietcetera team. You can also check out the video version of this podcast on our other platforms such as YouTube and Facebook. New episodes are out every week, so don't forget to subscribe to Vietcetera's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube channel for more interesting content.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Vietnam Innovators, brought to you by Office House. Opening in quarter four of 2021, the contactless office concept at Office House offers a number of touch-free features for the modern workspace. This eliminates direct contact with communal services, such as door handles. Mobile phones and contactless smart cards make entering and exiting the office floor and accessing other zones, such as lounge areas and washrooms, a seamless workspace experience.